Good afternoon, Dr. Danguera, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is indeed the 18th of April, 2024. And I think you know where we're going with this. This is going to be lecture number 7 in T lymphocyte, primarily membrane biochemistry. And this is part of an opus I'm calling immune cell biochemistry. And it's going to be unit 1, if you will. So, recall that there are several proteins that we find on lipid rafts in leukocytes and lymphocytes. Three of them that we've discussed very recently are PSGL1, CD44, and CD43. Now, using site-directed mutagenesis in a knock-in mouse model, the PSGL1 was introduced, which lacked the cytoplasmic domain. So that means it still associates with rafts in leukocytes and lymphocytes, and indeed in transfected non-hematopoietic cells, demonstrating detergent resistance of CD44. And when you add that knocked in PSGL cytoplasmic domain deficient protein, as is expressed, you're going to see that detergent resistance of CD44 is reversed. And that's caused by the mutation of the cysteines in a transmembrane and in those cytoplasmic domains. And remember where that binding site was, that was in the ERM. Ezrin, Redixin, Moesin binding site. Now, those are two different observations. So what are we saying? The reason this experiment was put together, this is a PNAS paper published 2015, yes, it'll be in the show notes, is because they wanted to know how the proteins target to the rafts. Okay? Because we're still in that examination period. Even, now it's 9 years later, but this kind of work is ongoing because, as you might understand, it's very complex because you have to use a mouse model to do the work. Cell culture only helps to some level, and cell culture studies are always done. But when you use a mouse model, at least you can look at then the potential for alterations in the immune response, right, in the intact animal. So, selectin binding to PSGL1 or CD44, and this is in neutrophils, triggers phosphorylation of those SFKs and downstream mediators. And they convert beta-2 integrins to that extended intermediate affinity state, which is slow rolling across the cell surface, thus contributing to arrest of the neutrophil. Of course, disrupting a lipid raft by depleting or, remember, sequestering cholesterol blocks the signaling, while the binding of the P-selectin to that PSGL1 on all the myeloid cells causes a shedding of what are known as microparticles. And those microparticles are going to have pro-inflammatory and pro-coagulant properties. So they're going to be a constellation of pro-inflammatory cytokines and coagulating proteins such as those found in the extracellular matrix, derivatizing the proteins in the extracellular matrix, sometimes functioning as metalloproteases. Of course, disrupting the lipid raft will result in that entire process. But what causes those proteins, those pro-inflammatory cytokines, for example, to become enriched in a raft-associated polyprotein complex when it's linked to non-raft proteins? So you're asking a question of signaling, not only signaling, but ultimately the release of the preformed pro-inflammatory cytokines, now leaving the plasma membrane. And how is that linked to non-RAFT proteins in the neutrophil? I know this is a very complicated question, but basically what they're asking is, once you have the entire membrane set up to carry on its rolling arrest function, so that cell-cell contact occurs, either with an endothelial cell or with, say, a T lymphocyte. This could be a neutrophil, dendritic cell, macrophage, okay? Many different kinds of cell types interacting here. This is a question about lipid rafts and those proteins you normally find associated either with the immune synapse directly, these are the ones we're talking about here, or all those other accessory proteins that are involved in binding specific selectins. So what they found was that disrupting rafts by chelating or sequestering cholesterol blocks this release of the pro-inflammatory cytokines. So not only is the signaling associated with reception, for example, T cell response, organized around lipid membrane rafts, but also finally the secretion of the product of that stimulation, here being pro-inflammatory cytokines, extracellular matrix metalloproteases, growth factors, etc. Okay? So that's answering another question that's still in the literature. It's not completely worked out. Now, tissue-resident memory T cells have a background story we want to cover here. Tissue-resident memory T cells are called TRMs. And of course, they are essential for local immune responses because they facilitate overall immune homeostasis within a tissue, such as the possibility of a recurring infection to recall the specific T resident memory response. So TRMs are more or less independent of all the other circulatory T cells. And they're identified by specific residency markers. This is where it becomes interesting, like once again, to me as a lipid biochemist. What are some of those markers? One of them is the sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor 1 suppressor protein, CD69, and one of the integrins, the alpha E, which is also known as CD103, the older literature. Now, the sphingosine 1-phosphate receptor 1 and sphingosine 1-phosphate, as you remember from earlier lectures in this series, are required for T and B cell egress from the lymphoid organs. Following exposure to inflammatory mediators, these lymphocytes will egress from lymphoid organs, and that can be transiently aborted. And that process is likely used to improve the ability to mount first a local immune response, rather than following, for example, what? Chemokine gradients to the location of an infection somewhere else in the periphery. Okay? Because the local immune response is the one that's got to be dealt with first and could well be occurring. That whole exposure to inflammatory mediators could be because something local is happening. See? So think about all of the temporal and spatial interactions that are going on here. That's why I'm bringing these up. I know it's complex, but I also know you have really quick minds. So, and you have quick minds because you're listening to authentic biochemistry. Now, indeed, prolonged systemic inhibition of that egress from the lymphoid organ, what kind of effect would you think it would have? Well, it's going to have an immunosuppressive effect. Okay. Now, There is a molecule that targets sphingosine 1 phosphate receptors, and that's called FTY-720. Now, that inhibitor has recently completed phase 3 clinical trials. And what is it used for? A hyperinflammatory disease, which we've all heard of, multiple sclerosis. Okay, so they're using a targeting to a S1P receptor, FTY-720. And that inhibitor then is being used for MS. So let's put this all together. You have to follow along, and I know you will. CD69, what is that? Because I told you that that's involved in the induction, okay, of the interferon alpha beta. And that's a strong dependent induction of the expression of CD69. Okay, and that's involved in egress, remember? And that's inhibited by inhibiting sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor, okay. So CD69, type 2, transmembrane protein, C-lectin family, and the CD69 gene is encoded within the natural killer C-type lectin cluster. So CD69, of course, is going to be disulfide-linked dimer. Many of these are. And its crystal structure establishes that it has an ectodomain. So that means it has a C-type lectin fold. And that determines whether it has retained a sugar binding site. Okay? Now, in contrast to other natural killer C-type lectin clusters, CD69 hasn't been established to have a role, a precise role, in natural killer cell recognition of their target cells. So, simple overexpression study where CD69 was shown to inhibit T cell egress from the thymus. And what was discovered was that endogenous CD69 inhibits the function of directly the sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor in both T and B cells. So, when CD69 is overexpressed, it causes a down modulation of sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor. So that's a reciprocal interaction when cells lacking expression of that sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor occur because of a targeted gene deletion, such that CD69 is detected now on the cell surface, okay, after you delete the sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor, okay? Now, what does that suggest? It's just the presence of that receptor for sphingosine 1 phosphate keeps the relatively low amount of CD69, which is produced in these naive natural killer T cells, from ever reaching the cell surface. So that means the sphingolipid, sphingosine 1 phosphate, which remember can come from ceraminidase mediated sphingosine production and then phosphorylation of the sphingosine. Remember the pathway again? That what that lipid is doing when it binds to its receptor is controlling CD69 countercurrent distribution within the membrane. Okay? That's the whole issue we're talking about here. Remember, we're talking about the proteins and the lipids and the lipid rafts and their interaction, the dialectic, right? That's why we're at this level of discussion, okay? Okay, now, further evidence that receptor for sphingosine 1 phosphate will antagonize the CD69 expression and where it is located on the cell surface or within the membrane comes from an identification of the sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor in a genetic screen for molecules that suppress surface CD69 expression in JERTAC cells and JERTCAT cells. Those are T cells, remember? So all those observations suggest that CD69 and sphingosine 1 phosphate receptor 1 interact in leukocyte and lymphocytes in multiple types of integrative events. And that an overabundance of either the sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor or the CD69 causes a suppression of the expression of the other. Okay? So there is a bivalent control over the expression of these two proteins that are regulating this very specific egress phenomena. All right? Among many different leukocytes and lymphocytes. So that suggests, okay, and they studied this then by doing co-immunoprecipitation experiments, then epitope tagging the receptors, using the reporter assays, and cross-linking of the receptor for sphingosine-1 phosphate, that you get an identical cross-linking of CD69. Okay? So these two proteins obviously have integrative associations in the matrix of the membrane. So what they did in this paper, this is a JBC paper from way back in 2010, I'm giving you this information, is they performed mutagenesis and domain swapping. And they wanted to map the regions of CD69, sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor 1, required for appropriate complex formation. And, of course, all that receptor downregulation. And using binding studies, what they show is that the complex has an increased affinity for sphingosine-1 phosphate, the ligand. And finally, that the sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor 1 protein amounts become reduced when there is a higher abundance of CD69. And finally, one more thing. They demonstrated that receptor for sphingosine-1 phosphate, when they generate one that is a non-binding mutant of CD69, becomes completely ineffective in blocking T cell egress from lymph nodes. So that whole study is explaining to you now how sphingosine-1 phosphate generated from sphingolipid metabolism. Remember how it's synthesized. Sphingosine comes from ceraminidase activity, where the amide-linked fatty acid is removed, generating sphingosine, free sphingosine. Then the sphingosine kinase reaction, generating S1P, and then S1P binding to one of many of its receptors, in this case, the sphingosine-1 phosphate receptor 1. And then that, in combination with interacting with CD69, in an antagonistic way in terms of expression of one protein over another, regulates T cell egress from lymph nodes. That's a very, very important data point. That's why it was published in JBC, one of the best journals out there. Okay. Now, more about these TRIMs. Okay. So I had to give you all that background so we could go back to talk about tissue resident memory cells. So that background was from 2010. Now we're back into a 2021 paper. So remember, the TRIMs are terminally differentiated subset of memory T cells. And once they're synthesized in the tissue and placed in situ, they are more or less permanently associated there. So they have limited motility, and they only have localized induction of proliferation. Obviously, that would happen. Now, that whole concept has been challenged in murine models, because it looks like there's a retrograde migration of these TRMs draining into the lymph node and the blood and even secondary tissue sites. There's a whole host of papers that show this. And here they were using humanized skin transplant mouse models. They demonstrated that the human skin derived CD4 positive T cells with that TRM signature were identified by expression of the cutaneous lymphocyte associated antigen that's called CLA. and an unexpected developmental plasticity of the TRMs was observed. And this was done with this murine transplant model, one I just explained to you. So upon recall antigen challenge, CD8-positive TRMs re-enter circulation, transdifferentiate into central memory-like T cells, still maintaining the propensity to go back home to the tissue of origin and still regain their TRM phenotype. So that means what used to be believed to be once localized to residency, these TRMs, these T-resident memory cells, used to be believed that they remain there. Now it's determined that's not the case. And it has to do with alterations in CLA, CD103, and downregulating CD69, which I just told you is anti-regulated by sphingosine 1 phosphate binding to its receptor 1, which once again recalls lipid metabolism controlling all the protein profile alterations within the fluid mosaic of the membranes involved in the cells interacting in this immune response. So there are reports of T cells with a skin type TRM signature discovered in the lymph and the blood. So what's going on with these circulating and recirculating TRMs in the human immune response? Okay, because we need to understand how these TRMs are functioning possibly as agents of pro-inflammatory, chronic, or autoimmune diseases, right? Because they may play a role, because they're already set up to trigger a hyper-inflammatory response, usually within a residency of a specific cell upon secondary antigen challenge, right? Okay. So they want to know if these TRM cells are, in fact, in the human clinical system, responsible for chronic hyperinflammatory responses in tissues because of their mobility. And this would go back to discussing the entire thing about Spingle lipid metabolism. Now, the paper that we're reading from 2021 doesn't even discuss that. I went all the way back to 2010 to pull that out for you so that you're aware of a data set that you could apply to this 2021 paper, but which they're not going to cover at all. See, that's why we're doing authentic biochemistry. I go back to the literature and I'm now recombining something that was known in 2021. It was 11 years old. About sphingosine 1 phosphate, but you had to know that sphingosine 1 phosphate binding to its receptor was interacting with CD69. And apparently, the people that did this study in 2021 weren't so interested in lipid metabolism. And that doesn't surprise me at all. Lipid metabolism is not something that's normally covered in many different laboratories. And the reason is because in order to study lipid metabolism, you have to have a lipid biochemist as a collaborator, or in the lab, maybe as the PI. And lipid biochemists, we are pretty rare phenomena. Okay, there's a whole reason for that that I'll explain sometime. But right now, just please accept that as a proposition that I think has truth and therefore validity in the argument I just made. Now, leukocytes stimulated with chemokines or even with bacterial peptides polarize to form the leading edge lamellipodia and a trailing edge uropod. Okay? So PSGL1, we've talked about CD43 and CD44, all those proteins we've talked about many, many, many times, redistribute to the uropods. So studies in transfected cells suggested that PSGL1 moves to uropods through interactions of its cytoplasmic domain with those ERM proteins. Now, going back to the knock-in mouse, PSGL1, lacking that cytoplasmic domain, relocated to the uropod of polarized neutrophils. And that's been proposed to suggest that PSGL1 moves to uropods by interacting with that protein called flotillin, which, remember, is a raft resident polypeptide. That's why it's called flotillin. Now, notably, understand that disrupting the lipid raft, this goes back to using those cyclodextrins, so therefore chelating cholesterol, actually blocks uropod formation. So what they wanted to know was whether or not PSGL1 or other proteins have to associate with the raft before moving to a uropod. So understand the complexity of the kind of work you're talking about here. Once again, I want you to keep in mind that when you have an interaction that occurs amongst various immune cells, those immune cells are going to have a profound effect on the status of a potential infective invasion. And that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind. Why is that important? Because the valency and the distribution of various bacteria, viruses, or even other microorganisms, in terms of their ability to be pathogens in different cell types and, of course, in different organisms, is going to be dependent on this entire series of interactions. Okay? So these uropods are just flattened lateral appendages, okay? That's what they are. They're just flattened lateral appendages. But they're a component of the membrane lipid raft, okay? So that's the whole point of studying this at the level of understanding all these interactions, right? So let me see how much more time I've got left. Okay, hold on here a second. I gotta go all the way back. Yeah, we got about a minute and a half left. Let me think if I can proceed here. I'll tell you real quickly, the loss of that core 1-derived O-glycan in leukocytes from EHCC1 GALT1 minus mice blocked raft targeting of PSGL1, CD43, and CD44, but did not block targeting of any of the other glycosylated proteins. And treating those leukocytes with neuraminidase to remove terminal sialic acids, neuraminic acid, and acetylneuraminic acid, had a very similar phenotype. So what does that suggest? The experiments of lipid rafts we just went through, right, with this PSGL1 moving in and out of those flattened appendages. What overall what this says is that failure to partition into rafts prevents PSGL1 or CD44 from activating those SF kinases and therefore generating the potentiation of release of pro-inflammatory cytokines. It also means that O-glycans are not required to redistribute to those three proteins, and that includes to the uropods of polarized leukocytes. Okay? So I'm going to leave you with that. Have you think about that, and we'll come back with a lecture probably tomorrow, Friday. If not, Saturday. This is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast, on a Thursday evening, saying, on the, that's the 18th of April, 2024, saying bye for now.